Well, the story that I'm going to start you out with today is, it's a true story. And it goes like this. It involves a man that made a decision to go to a village. And he didn't go to this village and just visit one home. He went to a village to visit seven homes for a very specific reason. Now, when the man that I'm talking about went into each of these seven homes, he did the same thing. He would come in and there would be a family in that home. There would be people gathered with the family. But it wasn't a time of fun or rejoicing. But he would go into homes that were in deep, deep mourning. But he had a mission. When he'd go into these homes, he was probably typically the shortest man in the home. He stood just over 5 foot, so he wasn't going to command much presence by his stature. But what he did in each of these homes was he got down in front of seven grieving families. He got on his knees and he begged for their forgiveness. He shared with him shame. And he asked that they would forgive him and his country as he poured out tears in front of these families. It was March of 1997 when this happened, and that man was someone who had been very important to a lot of things in this world, and even important to things for us in the church. That man was King Hussein bin Talal from Jordan, the father of modern Jordan. Right before he had arrived, there had been an incident where a group of schoolgirls from a village in Israel, Beit Shemesh, went to a place called the Island of Peace. The Island of Peace is a location that sits on the border of Jordan and Israel. And they went there because this Island of Peace is where Jordanian soldiers and Israeli soldiers basically were together, because the countries had signed a peace treaty not long before. But shortly before King Hussein arrived in these homes, one of their Jordanian soldiers killed seven girls from this school. Here's a bit of the story from the New York Times on March 17th, 1997. In a gesture of reconciliation today, King Hussein of Jordan visited the grieving families of the seven girls killed by a Jordanian soldier last week, telling them, "Your daughter is like my daughter. Your loss is my loss." Wearing a red checkered keffiyeh with his dark suit and accompanied by two of his children, his daughter Aisha, in military uniform as commander of the Jordanian Army's Corps, and his son Faisal, the king knelt before each of the families in their separate homes as they sat on the floor in the Jewish custom for the 7-day mourning period. There you can see him kneeling. You can see he was with the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu at the time, and they visited these homes in Israel in torrential rainfall. "If you would have seen her today, you would have hugged her and kissed her," said the mother of 13-year-old Sivan Petiti. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu knelt alongside the king, translating from the woman's Hebrew to English. Putting his hand over his heart, King Hussein replied, "She will always be alive in our hearts, and I hope you will always consider me a brother." As he rose to leave, Suvan's grandfather, Nassim Patihi, an immigrant from Yemen, blessed him in Arabic. From the Patihi home in the small agricultural community of Tesfalon, the motorcade wound through a torrential rain to Beit Shemesh, the working class town where the rest of the girls lived. Then King Hussein traveled to a hospital near Jerusalem where he visited a girl and a teacher wounded in the shooting. Israelis appeared to be deeply moved as they followed live broadcasts across the country of the king's visit, which reminded many in Israel of his eloquent eulogy at the funeral of the assassinated Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin in November 1995, and reaffirmed his place as the Arab leader most respected by Israelis. To sum it up, a quote from Miri Marie, the mother of 13-year-old Yalo, another victim, said the king asked her for forgiveness on behalf of his people. He said he was very ashamed, Mary said in an interview, adding that he had tears pouring out of his eyes as he spoke to her. It would have been pretty benevolent of King Hussein in a tragedy like that to address the nation of Israel, to address the grieving families of a nation that formerly was an enemy to his country. It would have been more than benevolent to hold a press conference and to share that with the world. But he went way beyond that. This king of a tiny little country that does not have much to it, it's not a big country, it's not a wealthy country, he went, he knelt, he begged their forgiveness, and he showed love. He showed love. How is that possible? He wasn't a man who was called. Not long before his death, a couple of years later, he was interviewed, and he said, "I view all people, not only my own children, but my Jordanian family who I lead." He said, "The refugees, the people who come to my country that I've inherited, and even those in Israel as my own children." He says, "I love them like my own children." How is it that that happens in life? I want to talk about that in the short time that I have today. And I want to look at the idea of how it is that a man, in this case a king, a monarchy, how a country, a people, can treat others, others that we call the stranger. And I want to talk about that today because I want to talk about three lessons of the stranger, three lessons we learn from the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. We're sending a group over there. And the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan has treated us as strangers in a way, coming from a different country, different culture, different religion. They've treated us as their own for a very, very long time. And I want to look at that today. I want to use the country of Jordan and let you all know, let the volunteers know, what kind of people they're going to see. And we can respect and draw and learn from the lessons that come out of this. It's the story of refugees and strangers living in the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, the land formerly known as Edom, Ammon, and Moab. Three lessons. Lesson number one I want to look at today is simply what you read at the top here. And that is, love the stranger. And we heard a story about how a man, a king, learned to love not only his former enemy, not only another country, but the people, the actual people, the individuals. The lesson number one that we have today is to love the stranger. We send our volunteers in to love. We talked a lot about that yesterday and today, that they go in to love. That's their number one way to serve, is to love. It's a different love. It comes from God. It's called agape love. It comes from the Holy Spirit working in the mind and the heart. It rises above physical circumstances. It rises above challenges they may face in their lives. When they're in Jordan, it's not always easy living in another country, in another culture, with another religion. It all looks glorious when you think of all the things that they're going to be able to do and experience, and that's true. But it's got a lot of challenge, and it has its ups and downs. But to love the stranger is what we ask them to do. But yet, ironically, they will be loved. They will be loved. Leviticus 19 and verse 33 says, and this was a command to the nation of Israel, says, "And if a stranger dwells with you in your land, you shall not mistreat him. The stranger who dwells among you, shall be to you as one born among you." It's like King Hussein. The stranger is to be like one of your own. Like you bring them into your own family. They're born among you. And you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Companion to that is in Deuteronomy 10:19, where it says, "Therefore, love the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." Israel was commanded to do this. This command, this imperative, flows from the old covenant, from the time of the nation of Israel, flows to us today. It flows under the new covenant, and it flows in a different way, because we're able to do this and connect on an individual level, just like King Hussein, a man who's not called or was not called, but somehow had a spirit in him to be able to love, to reach out to the stranger, in this case, ones that were grieving, his former enemies. Stranger, in this context, as we read about it, is normally the individual who's a temporary dweller with no inherited rights. They have no rights in the place that they're going. They have no rights for land. They don't have any rights for living there permanently or settling there permanently. But yet God says, treat the stranger as one of your own. I think of the story of Rahab. Early in the history of Israel, when they were going into the promised land and the walls of Jericho came down, and she helped them and they took her in. God had a plan, and that stranger who had been a prostitute changed, and her life became different. And now we read about her. She's in the genealogy of our Savior and our Messiah. You see, great things happen when you treat the stranger like this, when you love the stranger. You know, Jordan is an interesting place because it's a land. It's a place where for millennia people have lived, just like here we live. It's been around a lot longer in terms of being dwelt in than us as far as our nation goes, the United States of America. There were people living here before we arrived as a nation and were built as a nation. But this land, Jordan, has been around for millennia. But in one way, shape, or form, it seems to have always taken on the form of the home in the land that accepts the strangers, accepts outcasts, accepts refugees. And to this day, to this very day, we in the church of God have the honor that they bestow on us to experience this. We're sending 4 volunteers to a place that will experience this. When Cody Lynn and Marie and Sella talked the last day and a half about their experience in Jordan this last year, and their relationships. The one thing as I sat there and zipped my mouth up and listened was what came through loudest to me was the loving terms in which they spoke about the people. The love they felt. They didn't sit there and say, I love them, I love them, I love them. But everything they said just came out that way to me as I sat there, I think, to the volunteers that are new going over. But what was interesting was, yes, they loved them because they love. They loved the kids that they helped there because they love. God's taught them that. But they also loved them because they were loved. It's a special place that allows us to do something special. And that's why we're there. What about this ancient land? I'm going to step aside just a little bit. I don't normally like to do this, but we don't need to get too involved in this. But I think a lot of us, when we think of Jordan, we might know this, but Jordan is a country that historically, so what we would consider the land of Jordan, that area that's called Jordan today, is a land that has been highly impacted by not only Abraham, as has a lot of that part of the world, but also by Abraham's nephew, Lot, who Peter referred to as righteous Lot three times. Seems a bit contradictory, doesn't it, that Lot, the nephew, who barely was drug out of, it seemed, Sodom and Gomorrah, who sat in the city square in the gates of Sodom and Gomorrah, barely made it out. Was he really righteous? But he did obey God in the end, and he was called a righteous man. We know the story in the lineage of Abraham. Oops, we're going to go back. Sorry about that. We know the story. I'm trying. It's not working. Okay, Jerry, I've pressed every button. Now I know which one I need to press. We know the story of Abraham and Sarah. They had Isaac, but prior he had Ishmael. We've all heard the story, which is true, that Arabs consider themselves directly ancestors of Ishmael. Okay, Ishmael wandered, and most of Ishmael's descendants ended up in what we call the Arabian Peninsula and spread out from there. Now, Arabs today are a mixed race, but all Arabs will trace themselves back in one sense to the son of Ishmael. And as Muslims, they believe that Ishmael was the son of promise. We believe that is an error, but they believe that he was the son of promise. We also know the story of Isaac and that he had Esau and Jacob. Well, Esau, we know, did not become the son of promise, though he should have been. But he gave up his birthright, and his descendants ended up settling in what we call southern Jordan today, down actually in the area that many of you have been to in Petra and that the volunteers will go to. That's where they settled. But Abraham had a brother, Haran. They were both sons of Terah, and Haran died before his father Terah did. And so Terah decided to take Abraham, and Abraham's nephew Lot decided to go with him from Ur of the Chaldees to head towards Canaan. But they never made it with Terah. Terah stopped, and before Terah kept going on to Canaan, he died. And so Abraham and Lot went together. Lot followed his uncle, which changed the course of history, and it affected Jordan, because Lot, as we know the story, eventually settled in Sodom and Gomorrah. He left the city, it was destroyed, and he had two sons by his daughters. He had a son named Moab, and the other daughter had a son named Ben-Ammi. We know the story. It's not a pretty one. But his lineage carried on through his daughters. Moab, Ammi came from his daughters. Ben-Ammi eventually was referred to as a people called Ammon. That was the name of the nation that they had. Moab and Ammon and Jordan today in ancient times. Ishmael, current ruler, is not the land of Jordan. They're in the land of Arabia. that are more directly Ishmaelitish blood, because they came from the tribe of which was the great prophet. So those people, they descend from that. One more look. Why do we? What is this? This land called ancient Edom, Moab, and Ammon, and we see even north Ammon, Gilead, and these were these people became a land of strangers, a land of refugees. It's what it became. It had a long history of letting strangers come through, letting them do what they did. Lot, when he fled Sodom and Gomorrah, he settled the land of Zoar in the eastern Jordan Valley, which is a part of today. That's where he ended up settling. His descendants ended up settling up plains, Moab in the center of the country, slightly north of that, Ammon. Lot, the refugee, he had to flee. He needed a place, so he settled a small town called Zoar. We remember the story when he wrestled God. He fundamentally fleeing Laban, and he ended up wrestling God here in Gilead near the Jordan. Volunteers will get an opportunity if they want to visit in the mountains of Gilead and to visit the Jabbok, where Jacob. We know the story of the Israelites. As they went through the Exodus, they came into Jordan and they wanted to pass so they could go to the promised land. You remember the story, Edom wouldn't let them go. So they had to go around Edom. I don't know if they went around, but they went around Edom. And they ended up in Moab. And it was from there that Moses addressed the nation, all these that it spent all the time wandering in the wilderness, and they needed to be addressed, to be reminded of. So from Moab, were delivered the book of Deuteronomy. And it's from Moab that Moses, ended up looking at the promised land. God didn't allow Moab to go into Moses to go into the promised land from Moab. We all know that he died. Ruth herself is in all caps. She's interesting. We'll come back to her. Himself fled from Absalom, dwelt in the land of Gad as a refugee. John the Baptist spent much of his ministry, he didn't have a home. He spent much of his time. In fact, tradition, its oral tradition, has that he baptized in the Jordan, in the part of the Jordan River that now resides in Jordan. The volunteers will get a chance to visit that place. Some of you have visited that place. They call Bethany by name. We know where Jesus was baptized, but we don't know more about the location. It is also fairly believed that first century Christians, prior to the destruction of the temple, wars were going on. That when the great, things were really tough. Early Christians fled to an area called Pella. It was 110 capitals. The volunteers visited there. We've brought there to have feast service there. The ancient capitalists there for refuge. That doesn't necessarily mean, I hope you aren't fleeing. If you are, let me know. Talk. But willingly, strangers. To this day, fairly linked as a people to these peoples, Edom, linked directly. Place that as a refugee. Then that. About Ruth. You see, Ruth was a Moabite, we all know that. Ruth left her And she went as a stranger and a pilgrim over the land of Israel. The opposite. She left this land for refugees after her husband. And it's a course of history. Boaz, they became the great grandparents of King David. And they were direct descendants of Messiah. What about this home? You know, in modern times, in my culture, I'm on the side, there's been a whole lot of strangers. Hey, read the news. Where are all the people who've had the mission of a refugee forced to leave the place where they're in order to see something in their life, war, persecution, natural disaster. Did you ever feel like you needed to just get out of a situation? Something occurred to you? Goodness has a lot of situation in the modern era. Long since the king of Edom, the king of Edom, 1948, in the war of independence between 300,000 Palestinians came to the land. In 1960, after the 6th conflict between Arabs and Israelis, another 500,000 people of Palestine into Jordan. All of the citizens ultimately. And I lived there in 1999. We witnessed a wave of refugees in Kuwait. Come from Iraq after the first call as the Kuwaitis kicked them out. And when we 500,000, we're talking about terms. Nobody knows the exact numbers. We were able to being able to drink water from taps and having the bottle because all the refugees come into the city of Amman. Water came unclean. We would always drink water. Still one of those little things. 2003, 9/11, another, I believe, half a refugees. He went back to many states. And as I mentioned now, for refugees from the estimates, United Nations, 700,000 in Jordan. 500,000 refugees. You know, the King's family have led a living place for strangers, refugees, to help them. Even at times, them citizenship, like they were born, like they were born there. Nobody else would ever give Palestinian refugees. Their own mother wouldn't do it. They lived decades and all their ladies never gave them. They treated them of citizenship. They treated number one of embrace this angel. You ever think of that? What does it mean to embrace angels unaware? It's 13 verse apostle Paul wrote this book. It says this theme of stranger continues because let all of us, isn't it? Verse 2, do not for so do some have entertained pain. Embrace prayers, right? When they first got out of there, they didn't necessarily work. They just came to help. But kindness, love, someone have a reason for coming to our lives. Have you embraced danger? Have danger in your life. I don't know if I've ever had an angel direct into my life. Me and three other people think maybe Micah could have been. We'll find out someday. I'm talking at Micah, I'm afraid we laugh about it today. How about you? You thought, was that maybe? What is it? Picture on the screen here, old Brussels, and I was 19 years old, and I was on my first trip traveling through Europe, where I met a friend, Eugene, at the time, and his student, Carol Burbeck, who is one that we all know, Carol Townsend, married to George Townsend. She worked at the home office in Texas. Johnny Daly in Europe, got to London and started to take training. Got lost English. Real nervous, but we were in kind of where we were going to go. How much we're going to get so we can get now. Confused, might not do. But the person who ultimately called Boxcar Willie. Willie was just a short little man. And the thing I always remembered about him was he had a mustache, but Hitler's mustache. He was one of those little square ones. And he came up to us and called. He started helping us, and when the train stops, he said, come with me. Boxcar with he bought a beer. I list at that point. Beer. He explained exactly what we needed to show us the map. I felt so comforted that this stranger came in and helped us out, and he took care of us. Then he was gone. Never die. He didn't even leave. No, I'm sorry. We always had this story. Where did Boxcar Willie go? So we broke Boxcar Willie as our angel. We need to help. We know how to help us meet. That's Boxcar Willie. I didn't need to grab a picture of what it looks like. It's in predominant mind forever. But you can turn the concept of head. It's unaware. What if the one who acted like it, and all I mean by live the life of serving, loving, caring for the former, or the stranger? One time we were going to live with us, a friend, Colleen, for a month, because he was waiting. It was going to take another month. We sat out on any rent. We just got in the house. And Bill got delayed, but he went to life crisis. The girl he was he almost got suicidal. Maybe we thought, just sat a month, just a month, big deal, moving to your house, place. And he ended up with us like four or five months. We have prayer. You know what happened? And I believe that with all of our hearts. Years later, he had a very close friend who married and had kids. His wife's up and left on his own. He was suicidal. His friend. And he lived with our friend for a long time until he got back on his feet. Isn't the way God's way works sometimes? Precepts of how to deal with the stranger, how to help people. We've got to follow those precepts. It just seems to take that something happened over and over again. There's some good value. And that's year in, year out. Us to treat us more of this to first treat us well. Not a lot of them. The Jordan volunteers experience. How will they retain volunteers and soldiers in the land? You know, what you do. Oh, you did. Well, here's how I'll experience it. Sorry, if I was, okay. We're going to try it again. How will they experience it? Well, you see a picture here of what they experience at core and fundamentalists. They'll experience the hospitality and the kind and the some of which that feast. The better is and you get a pure air, a pure smell. They still wander around all of the Middle East, and many of them. They wander to the desert. They settle with their camps. They attend them. They settle in the city. The volunteers see them kind of pass through with their herds of goats, their herds of sheep. Sometimes they have herds of camels. They have an offer that I'm my brother. Think of Ishmael when you read this. I am against my brother. My brother and I are against my cousin. My cousin and I are against a stranger. The concept of, you know, sometimes I do not see like me, my closest kin are the close, but we have a common enemy. We're a band together. And if we band together, then another common enemy will have it. And this pervasive in society, when they give that, They give it with their whole heart. I remember one time a small group of our volunteers back when Colleen and I lived there, they wanted to experience the true Bedouin experience. Colleen and I didn't go with them. And they went right in the desert of Wadi Rum and they went up to some tents and they were accepted in. And the Bedouins decided they were going to serve them a really scrumptious special meal to welcome them. So they went out and slaughtered a lamb. And they pulled the kidneys out fresh. They didn't cook them. And they brought them in. And they gave them the fresh kidneys, fresh out of the lamb, to eat raw. Guess what the volunteers had to do? They didn't want to offend them, so they ate some of the kidneys. Volunteers, that's a warning to you. If you want to go native, be really careful. Because you might get what you asked for. They serve them goat's milk fresh from the goat. Some of you might like that, but many of you wouldn't. I remember one time we went to a general's house. We decided to show us Bedouin hospitality. And he had a lamb, the whole lamb out there cooked on a bed of rice. But there was the whole lamb in his head, the poor lamb's head, and his eyes. I'm like, why would he leave the eyes in? If you're going to cook the lamb and leave his head on, at least get rid of the eyes. It's kind of spooky. But we were the honored guests. And guess what you do to the honored guests? You give them the eye. And they get to eat it. I had volunteers with me. Guess who got to eat the eyes? It's called rank and privilege. When we first got back after the Gulf War, and war was gearing up in the first Gulf War between Iraq and Kuwait, when I brought Colleen in as a bride, we'd just been married, they were burning American and Israeli flags, and things were scary, and we went into a store, and I knew the store owners very well, and the store owner said to me, in the spirit of the Bedouins, he said, if anyone tries to harm you, he said, I want you to let me know. If you feel afraid, let me know. He said, I'm going to bring you into my home, you and Colleen, and if they try to do anything to you, I will kill them. I will kill them because I've brought you into my home. Extreme in our culture, but it's called loving the stranger, being willing to even give your life. Sometimes when you do that, incredible things happen. You know, at the end of our time in Jordan, the last year we were there, we had spent many years, we'd gotten to know the Queen of Jordan. She had sponsored feast groups at the palace. She had worked with us. This was Queen Noor, the former wife of King Hussein. And it was a swan song for my boss because the church at the time was falling apart. It was the last few months before we left. It was early 1995. My boss was under a lot of pressure. The church behind this incredible project was struggling. And we all know, or at least many of us here know, the story, how it played out. But we had a visit set up with Queen Noor. It was his swan song. We were going to meet her in the palace. And my boss was so happy to be able to go in and meet the Queen. He had met her before, but now he really got a chance to sit down, not knowing the future of the project, which did close down not long after that because of the crisis in the church. And when he sat there, she asked him, well, how are you doing? He said, well, I'm doing fine. I'm doing well, but my father just died yesterday. And the Queen looked at him. And I watched her, and tears started to well up in her eyes, and you could see the tears. And I sat there amazed as tears were in her eyes. She looked at him and she said, why are you here with me? Why are you here with me? She had that much love and compassion. Now, she was the queen of the country. I'll never forget that because it was so genuine. And it just reminded me and reflected on what that royal family was really like. Well, the ending was coming soon for that era for the project. It was coming soon. And it did end. In 1996 was the last year. Which leads us to the last point today on lessons from strangers. There's Queen Noor with volunteers. And that is this. Live like strangers. We're learning lessons about strangers, pilgrims, sojourners, exiles, refugees, and how they're treated by a country, how God has opened up an opportunity and a work for us. It's hard to reach that part of the world. How do you reach it? How do you engage it? How do you model what God has taught us? How do you live an example? How do you live a life like that in that part of the world? There's countries we wouldn't dare enter right now. But Jordan's different. But we go there to live like strangers. In Hebrews 11 and verse 13, it says, these all died in the faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. Verse 15, and if truly they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better country, that is a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. In some ways, nothing changes for the volunteers when they go over than from their lives here, because it's no different than their lives here or our lives being called out. Because we're strangers on this earth. The difference for them is they get to go over and live it in a very different context. The visibility on them, the observing of them, is ratcheted up because they're not of them. People know they're not from that country. Like Marie Fregi said yesterday, she said their view of Americans in that country is in the movies. So they watch, they look. When we talk about that light set on a hill, this light has to shine a bit brighter because they don't blend in, not just physically, but also as people coming from a different culture and a different nation. It's a different kind of responsibility. God opened a door in 1982. We all know this, when Mr. Armstrong, who was leading the church at the time, said a new and heartwarming experience. This is the first time he visited one of the schools that the students are going to. He said, it's a heartwarming experience to visit this school. It is a mission of love to the handicapped who need that love and training so sorely, and an important contribution to the whole society as well. I shall count it as a privilege to have a small part by a great grant from the Ambassador Foundation. And that fall, he sent over Dick Weber and his wife, and they set up a wood shop where even today our volunteers go in and they serve the handicapped in a wood shop. That's what they do. And the following fall in 1983, the first group of Ambassador College volunteers went over, and it started something that never changed. There was a pause in it. This is Mr. Armstrong meeting with our sponsor, Princess Sarvath Al-Hassan. This was the last time he was there. Right before he died, he was in Jordan and he signed his signature in the guest book like he had signed the first time in 1982. Mr. Armstrong's long since gone. He did create a legacy, but Dusty said, "Me, what are you, Corey? Are you the founder?" No. Not even close. Even Mr. Armstrong wasn't the founder. He was an instrument to helping this relationship get formed. He stuck his neck out. He had a vision, but he wasn't the founder. Jesus Christ is the founder. We were there for many years, many, many years, until from 1982 to 1996, and the project closed down. We had 12 projects years there. Colleen and I were there for a number of those, not all of them. We enjoyed our time there. We had 152 volunteers pass through at that time, 152. And when that project closed down, it was hard to imagine a time when it would open up again. Who could have imagined that it would open up again? I'm going to go to the next slide. But slides are fun, aren't they? Back in 2005, let's step aside here. In 2005, after 9/11, it occurred a number of years earlier, right? And we didn't feel comfortable having feasts there as a church. The project had long since been closed. We had no idea or concept of having volunteers. We started feasts up, and we had one in 2005. The volume in terms of numbers, but with this group going over, we'll have had now 43 volunteers since 2007 between United Youth Corps and now Foundation Outreach International. We'll have had 43, 11 project years, a whole nother opportunity to continue an opportunity of and a legacy to serve. to be the strangers that go over there in the land, to give love, to receive love. What does this all mean as we begin to wrap up the message? What does it all mean? What's going to happen to this country, Jordan, in the future? Is there any reward for the fact that God has intended to open up a door, an opportunity for these young people to go over? I'm always jealous. I have to spend time being jealous now that I don't get to go over there and live over there. Occasionally I get to travel over there. But I feel a little bit of a tinge of, I know what they're going to do, and I know what it's like, you know, at least living in that type of a country. But what's the answer? It used to be a land back in the biblical times that would receive foreigners, strangers, refugees. We read about them in the Bible. It's a land that today, though those people are gone, this land still does that. This special benevolent monarchy has created an atmosphere. The people, the Bedouins, and their hospitality, and how that spirit has flowed through the Jordanian people. And those of you that have traveled there know what I'm talking about. Special little country continues to do it, and it opens the door for the work of God to be done in the Arab Muslim world. It may not be a big work, but we have a relationship. We can go over there and display God's way of life. We can love. We can serve. What's their future in this land? Well, I don't pretend to know all the answers. I'm sure none of you do. But I'll close on this today, as far as any scriptures or any of that. But in Isaiah 15 and Ezekiel 25, as there are in other places in Jeremiah, we read a lot of condemnations of Edom, Moab, and Ammon. And in Ezekiel 25, it talks about them being punished such that they may not be remembered among the nations. And that actually happened. A lot of those prophecies have been fulfilled. There are more yet to be fulfilled in the future. But Nebuchadnezzar conquered Moab himself, and they disappeared after he conquered them and then went and conquered Egypt. They disappeared. Moab and these nations disappeared from the record during the Persian period. That's when you quit hearing about them in this land we know today as Jordan. But in Jeremiah 48 and verse 47, we read something about the future, the latter days, the end times. The latter days refers to the times that we live in, where it says, "Yet I will bring back the captives of Moab in the latter days, says the Lord." There's this prophecy that there may be refugees. There may be people that still come into this land. God will somehow provide a blessing to the land. You know, in 1950, we saw the establishment of the Hashemite kingdom of Jordan. It became a nation. And since that time and just prior, they've been a home to foreigners and strangers, people fleeing. They've been a home to us, our people, God's people. Another very interesting prophecy occurs in Daniel 11:41. Where it's talking about the king of the north. Talk about the time when things are really crazy, and the king of the north is clashing with the king of the south. And it says, "He, the king of the north, shall also enter the glorious land, the land of Israel. A great battle will take place. And many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape from his hand, Edom, Moab, and the prominent people of Ammon." Why would God possibly spare people in that part of the world during these times? I don't know the answer to that. But could it perhaps be that it's been a land of refuge? It's where righteous Lot went. It's where his descendants settled and they lived. It's where strangers were loved, refugees, exiles were housed. Could be because was in that land that they accepted our early predecessors fleeing from Jerusalem into their land for a place of refuge. And they gave them a place to escape war. Could it be that they have been so kind to us, so loving, so accepting, Is this their reward for these people that live there now? Might they accept people fleeing in the future from wars, people under persecution that were formerly their enemies? We don't know the answer. But it appears God is going to show some favor to this land. He's showing it us favor now through them. So to close, I'd like you to meet our volunteers for next year. They're here. You're going to get a chance, those of you who haven't, to fellowship with them after church. Ask them, why are you crazy enough to go do it? And I'm just kidding, of course. But these are your volunteers going over to Jordan. The four in the middle are the ones I mentioned that are going. Sela for a second time. And the two on the outside, Marie and Sela, have been so kind to come from Jordan back home and to dash up here to help get them ready. You will be foreigners, you will be strangers, but God will bless you because it's His purpose that you be there. And we wish you Godspeed and we pray for you.